Welcome in, Tigers fans, to another edition of Before the Box Score. Alongside Aaron Dryden, I am Brandon Kiley. Aaron's filling in once again for Nate Edwards, and we've actually got a lot of news to discuss today, given the fact that it is the offseason. This is typically a pretty dead period before you get to the late signing period. That has not been the case for Mizzou. Over the last few days, you've had a significant transfer announce his decision. You've had some Mizzou seniors announcing their intentions to return, and one that will not be returning as well that's notable. And the defensive coordinator has decided to take his talents elsewhere. So we've got plenty to discuss. Let's start with the transfer news, because Mookie Cooper, a four-star athlete from the 2020 class, so this was just last spring when he signed, the number one athlete in the country as rated by Rivals, has decided he is done at Ohio State, didn't see a whole lot of playing time there this year, and he's going to commit to Mizzou. He's going to come to the Tigers, and this is a former St. Louis kid, four-star out of Pattonville, has decided to make his announcement. He's going to be a Mizzou receiver next year. Aaron, what was your reaction when you saw the good news earlier this week, man?
Man, like a lot of Mizzou fans, I was just really excited. You had heard the rumblings. You'd seen him enter the transfer portal. And naturally, when a guy who goes out of state enters the transfer portal, especially that quickly after getting onto campus, you can kind of see where he may be heading, some of the places that he's looking at. So I knew that Illinois was maybe an option. I knew his old high school coach was under Lovey's staff, and then now I guess was held on by Bielema. But then also Mizzou was in the mix too, so it looked like he was trying to come home, and I'm just really, really happy he chose Mizzou. You know, he's dynamic as can be. Profile's more of a slot player, but has just a lot of skills that you don't really see that often. Kind of a big body, kind of strong, but like I said, still kind of on the smaller side. Slot, think slot receiver. I think he's 5'8". So overall, just really excited. He's a good player, good prospect. Solved some of the problems that we anticipated at wide receiver. Kind of alleviates that a little bit. So overall excitement, and just really looking forward to seeing how they're going to utilize him and guys like Lovett and all the other guys who are still on the roster.
Yeah, that's maybe what I'm most interested in this, is the utilization, because he seems to me, and tell me if I'm wrong here, Aaron, but it seems like he's almost a carbon copy of Jalen Knox in terms of the way that you would like to see him used, where he's kind of like a running back at the receiver position. You're going to use him a lot underneath. You're going to get him in these jet sweep situations. Mm-hmm. You're going to use him pre-snap motion all the time. Him, Mookie Cooper, I'm speaking of, Jalen Knox, Dominic Lovett, they all seem to kind of fit that same role. And so I'm going to be fascinated to see what that means for their playing time next year, because you see a lot of Michael Wilson in the slot as well. They didn't do a ton of four wide last year. So it seems like you're probably going to mostly see one of those guys on the field at any given time. That's basically four dudes for one spot. I'm really kind of fascinated to see how Eli Drinkwitz navigates that next year.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting position battle kind of to watch throughout camp, just because, like you said, there's so many different guys who kind of fit that profile. So I'm sure that they'll be trying to find opportunities for these guys to get touches and get in the game and get their feet wet. But having weapons like Lovett and having weapons like Cooper is never a bad thing. Never been a bad thing, especially for a school like Mizzou, where it seems like recently that we've had a few really nice offensive talents, but it doesn't seem like we've had that game breaker necessarily. I guess I'd maybe qualify Roundtree as that, but he's more of a put it on you running back, not so much of a speed and lateral movement guy. So definitely a good thing. Definitely excited to see Cooper get into the fold and hopefully earn some time early.
Yeah, I think he has the potential to. I mean, I know a lot of people are probably looking at this, and I don't know about a lot, but there's probably some people that are a little skeptical, and they say to themselves, hey, this is a guy that I think there were like 8 receivers at Ohio State, if I'm not mistaken, that saw the field this year. Mookie Cooper did not. And so there's something to be said about that, but also keep in mind, it's Ohio State where he didn't see the field. That is not the same as coming to Mizzou and not seeing the field. Maybe Mookie Cooper never translates to the college level. That's possible. It happens all the time where you see these guys that come in that are highly rated that for whatever reason, it just doesn't work at the next level. I don't predict that to be the case for Mookie Cooper. He is an incredibly talented football player, and Eli Drinkwitz is a good enough coach that I think he's going to find a way to utilize him. And not being able to see the field at Ohio State is just, it's not the same thing as having those same issues at Mizzou. So I fully expect they'll find a way to use him. And man, if nothing else, between Lovett and Mookie Cooper, I think they're going to be vastly improved in the punt return game next year. Like, both of those guys can come in and immediately fix what was, honestly, this sounds kind of crazy to say, but it was legitimately one of the biggest issues on the football team a year ago. They had nobody that could consistently catch and make something happen on punts. It was one of the worst things they did.
Yeah, and, you know, God love them, Cade Musser probably is not the long-term answer at punt return.
Right.
And to get guys like this who definitely have that burst, that extra bit of quickness, you know, that elite athletic ability, definitely does not hurt. And can for a position that we really got zero, negative, actually, when you think about it, from this is a huge, huge, huge thing to get so many different guys who could potentially get cracks at it.
So let's stick with the receivers. There was also the news earlier this week about a bunch of seniors announcing their plans. Grant McInnes, punter, going to be back next year. Kobe Whiteside, defensive line, coming back. Michael Wilson and Kiki Chisholm, both wide receivers, going to be back. Jabal Brooks is coming back. Markell Utsi and Akil Byers, two defensive linemen, going to be back. And Michael Maietti is coming back. These were all significant. I know we had talked, Aaron, in the past, I think this was on the last podcast, how significant it would be if they could get Kiki Chisholm in particular to return. Man, the only senior, basically, of note that was in question as to whether or not he was going to return next year that is not going to is Damon Hazelton. He's decided that he's going to go to the NFL, and God bless him, I hope he's successful in doing so, but I don't know that you could have drawn this up any better for Eli Drinkwitz and Mizzou. Most of the guys, almost all of them, that you wanted to see back next year have decided to do so. And it doesn't hurt them. They don't count against the scholarship limits. So the only thing this can do is improve the depth going into next season.
Definitely. And you see it through it's the common denominator in all of the best teams in this conference. These teams are built through the trenches. And so maybe Missouri doesn't have the elite talent that in Alabama or a Georgia or LSU even may have along their trenches, but the continuity and also having older guys getting a bunch of different snaps definitely helps. And like we kind of talked about it last podcast, but when you bring Maietti back, you obviously lose Borum, but we're expecting Hiron White to come back and fill in one of those tackle spots. So altogether, it just makes it look that much more optimistic of an outlook for the offensive line especially, but then the defensive line as well, keeping Whiteside and Utsi for next year and Akil Byers. So depth aplenty in both of the trenches on each side of the ball.
Does it allow you to bring these guys along a little slower that you had committed, right? So a guy like Luke Griffin is not, if he's not ready, and I think he might be going into next year, but if he's not for whatever reason, you can give him another year of development. Drake Heismeier, a guy that they seemed to like this year. He doesn't have to be ready immediately going into next season. You're going to be able to get a little bit more development. And then maybe even more importantly, the defensive linemen in this past class, and they had a bunch of them, a bunch of really good ones, but I think most of them need some time to really start developing. I'm thinking of Travion Ford, Jonathan Jones, Kyron Montgomery, really good players, Arden Walker out of Colorado. Guys that look like they can be really good players for them, if they can get a year or two of development under their wings and get into the strength and conditioning program, have a full calendar year of that prior to getting on the field, well, that totally changes the expectations for them whenever they arrive on campus. And I think that's a good thing. If you're able to build that depth and have that going into next year, you're not counting on them immediately to do something for you. If they do, it's gravy, right? It's just the cherry on top. But if they don't, it's not like you were missing something. It's not like you were immediately expecting them to come in and be a savior for you. That's when you start running into a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, to your point, getting Montgomery and Ford and Walker, some of these younger guys, especially on the edges, give them some time. You know, it's really a large ask to come in and have a guy start for you or have even expect a certain level of production from a guy who's just getting accustomed to the collegiate lifestyle. So giving those guys some time to breathe is definitely going to be advantageous going forward. And just, I'm really interested in seeing what do guys like Akil Byers and Markell Utsi, what do they look like in year 5 or year 6 in the program? You know, that's where you really see the difference between men and boys. And I'm really interested to seeing if they can really take that next step. Everybody wishes for an extra year so maybe they could prove something. Well, these guys have that chance, and now I'm really looking forward to seeing what they can do with it.
Especially Whiteside, because this year was decimated by injury and COVID and all of that stuff, right? I mean, this is a kid that a year ago, around this time last year, I was really excited to see what he was going to be able to do without having Jordan Elliott next to him, because we all knew how special, how talented Jordan Elliott was. We heard about it from the moment that he walked on campus. He was dominating practices when nobody was able to see him in the games after he had transferred and had to sit out. Well, he ends up getting in there with Coby Whiteside, and maybe Jordan Elliott's numbers weren't what some Mizzou fans would have hoped that they would be. But what he did is he allowed Coby Whiteside to have one-on-ones all the time, and Coby Whiteside dominated. Some of his numbers that he had his junior season were just outlandish. Well, this year we didn't get to see any of that because his year was totally ruined by some of the stuff that happened off of the field with injuries and health-related reasons. So I'm really excited to be able to see what he looks like in a full year when he's been able to recover from all of that stuff and when he's closer to 100% health. So with him, Utsi, Byers, Robinson, some of the guys that are coming in, a couple of the JUCO transfers, getting another year of Jeffcoat, I don't know if this has the potential to be a special defensive line next year, but I think it buys them enough time to be rock solid next year, and then hopefully one of those guys that was highly rated in last year's recruiting class by 2022, that season, is able to come in and have a little bit more potential that year.
Definitely. Most definitely. I'm a defensive line guy by heart, but just seeing some of these younger guys, how they find a way to earn snaps early on, especially when you have an entrenched starter like Jeffcoat on the end, looks like there's going to be a spot to play for. And one guy who we haven't mentioned, who I've seen rumblings, I don't know if he's actually made his announcement, but Chris Turner, I've seen rumblings that he may decide to come back as well. So just the overall depth and experience of this group is just at a different level than we really had last year. And I think that's something that Drink is really going to benefit from.
Yeah, and it helps balance out the classes too, which was a little bit of a problem for them for a while. Let's go back to the receivers, because we mentioned the fact that Kiki Chisholm and Micah Wilson are both expected to return next year. They've both made their announcement. How do you think this rotation ultimately shakes out? Because we talked about this on the last podcast a little bit, but at the time, Mookie Cooper wasn't a part of the roster. I think Kiki Chisholm and Towski Dove are going to be your starters outside. I think the starter on day one will still be Jalen Knox. Who else, if you had to put together a rotation of like 6 guys-ish, who else do you think cracks that rotation next year?
Well, I would say that Chisholm and Dove are definitely two of the for sure ones, who I would say. And then I think you look at guys like Knox and Bannister potentially getting the first crack, especially in the slot position. And I honestly think, even though we see guys like Mookie Cooper and Dominic Lovett and Jalen Knox, I wouldn't sleep on Barrett Bannister. He's been here for a few years and he's just steady. He's consistent. And I think that that's something that they're really going to value is, on 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6, can we rely on you to make that catch and move the chains? So I would think he would be in the mix as well. And then on that note, I think maybe Michael Wilson could fill in and get some snaps. But it's just really going to depend on what these younger guys look like. Because I'm really curious to see if once they get on campus, is it going to be one of those things where it's a slow development, or are we going to just know immediately by the time they get on the campus that, hey, these guys are a little bit different. We got to find a way to get them into the game.
The one thing that I'm, I guess, anxious about with the receivers is they still just don't have many options outside. Because you're right. No. I mean, Knox, Wilson, Cooper, Lovett, Bannister. You can even throw Chris Abrams-Drain into that mix, who got a few snaps towards the end of the year. All of those guys project to play inside. Jay Macklin maybe projects to play a little bit inside. He's just a little short to play outside. He could potentially do it, but I think his ideal spot would probably be inside. Boo Smith can do a little bit of both. Chance Looper could probably play outside, but really, the three guys that project truly to the outside are Chisholm, Dove, and J.J. Hester right now. And so when you look at it that way, I am a little worried if there is any sort of injury issue or anything like that. I just don't know who the other outside players are going to be for them. So I still think even with Mookie Cooper in the mix, I wouldn't be stunned if they take another, whether it be grad transfer or just younger transfer, somebody that projects as like a 6'2 plus wide receiver who can play outside, that can beat man coverage, and can play on the line of scrimmage. I know they got Chisholm back, and that's huge, but for 2022 and beyond, I still don't know that they have a guy out there that I'd really trust from that perspective.
No, they don't. I know they're recruiting a couple of guys. They have offers out for guys like Kevin Coleman and Luther Burden, obviously, but They're still missing that
Burden
guy,
probably changes sure this discussion quite a bit. Five-star kid out of Cardinal.
Yeah, if they find a way to, flip him, then I think we're having a different discussion, and it's a more substantially positive one. But for the time being, I think we're kind of looking. I think they're probably going to look inwards as far as development and seeing maybe if somebody can take that next step. You never know what a guy's going to look like after another full off season. So at this moment, yes, we are a little thin at those outside receiver positions, but I think that the overall depth of guys is something to be really, really excited
so
about.
So you mentioned how Mizzou's got some offers out to guys in the 2022 class. They certainly do. Mm-hmm. One of those guys is Tyson Ford, a four-star defensive end, 6'6", 250 pounds, big kid out of John Burroughs. He recently put out his top four schools, and it did include Mizzou, and it is expected that in the not-too-distant future, he's going to be making his decision. His top four was Notre Dame, Georgia, Oklahoma, and Missouri. Based on everything you have read, everything you have seen, do you think there is a lean here? And if he is a legitimate option for Mizzou, what would he mean for this D-line Zoo potential addition?
Man, if Tyson Ford finds a way to Columbia, man, we will need to throw a parade. The guy is a four-star prospect, but I would say that he's, I mean, a pretty high four-star, closer to a five-star, probably. And I think that it's a legitimate chance that he could choose Missouri. Now, I'll say that 24/7, the crystal ball has him pegged to Oklahoma, I believe. I think they have him lean to Oklahoma. But I'm not counting this out. I see him on social media. He's very active with Mizzou fans, and I think he's truly interested, and I think there's a buzz. So there is definitely a chance, and he's a guy we need to, as a Mizzou fan base, need to keep our eye out on, because if we could find a way to land him, he's just like some of the guys we signed in this previous class. He's one of those elite talents, and Missouri doesn't have that many elite talents on this roster. We're starting to accumulate some, but it's just not where it needs to be right now. So you see the elite schools like Georgia, like Alabama, and all these other schools who have these waves of defensive linemen. It's not just one or two. It's two, three, four, five different guys who can come in and be difference makers. So representing the St. Louis area, not only would it be a huge deal for him just as like a talent standpoint, but you know, controlling the St. Louis area and continuing your success in that area is going to be huge. So Tyson Ford, please, if you're listening.
He'd be a great addition. The other thing about him I find really interesting is he doesn't have the same profile as a defensive end as some of these other Mizzou players that they've got in recent years. I mean, listen, like we say the position, and that can mean a million different things. There's guys that are 6'2 and 220 pounds coming off of the edge now. That's not Tyson Ford. Tyson Ford is listed at 6'6, 250. So if you need a little bit of context, that's more similar to like the Coney Ealy style of defensive end. Like by the time that Tyson Ford leaves Mizzou, given where he's already at, it wouldn't be a stunner if he's playing a little bit inside at that height and that size.
Yeah.
He's got a frame that he can put on some pretty good weight and be an absolute monster. Like if he ends up going to the NFL, it wouldn't be a surprise to me if he's a 3-4 defensive end. And that's where he ultimately ends up. So
he's
a guy that could fit in Mizzou's defense because he's got talent. And coming off of that edge, he's got something that they don't have. Him on one side with Trajan Jeffcoat on the other would be amazing to watch. That'd be a huge get for him. But like you said, the future's cast over on rivals as well. Right now is at 100% for Oklahoma. I don't know how much to follow those things. They can absolutely be wrong, but it seems like it's an Oklahoma lean right now just from a 10,000-foot view perspective. A guy that maybe might be a little bit more likely to end up at Mizzou is another 4-star. This one, a defensive tackle. I apologize if I am butchering his name. Marquis Gratial, I'm going to go with that. He is out of St. Charles, Missouri. Aaron, I know you are a defensive line guy. What can you tell us about this kid, and do you think that he is a more realistic option for Mizzou?
Man, I'm very biased. I've seen Marquise play for a little while now, and full disclosure, we went to the same high school. Marquise is a wonderful player, and I think he's absolutely in the mix for Missouri. He's got offers from all over the place, including Alabama. Nick Saban is pretty keen on him. So I think that he's not necessarily like a backup plan, I would say, but I think he is a priority for Missouri. I don't know exactly when he's looking at making a decision. I've heard rumblings that it could be sooner rather than later. But, you know, finding a way to get him into the program, you look at his height and weight right now. He's 6'5", 295. He's a junior in high school.
Ridiculous. He looks, that's a big
dude. He's every bit of 295. That's not a flabby 295. The kid's a built kid. So, just, you know, I encourage everybody to go look at his film for maybe a better context. But he's just a violent, violent player. Very athletic. And kind of profiles more of a 3-tech. D-tackle, but man, just very talented. Like I said, I'm biased. I root for my alma mater, but he's a good player. He's going places, and I'm hopeful that he'll be at Mizzou sooner rather than later.
This is such a good second, technically, but first full like cycle where Eli Drinkwitz is able to talk to these kids as they're underclassmen and then gets to know them as they are on their way up. What a class for him to be able to do that with. I mean, Missouri is not typically a state where you're going to have 20-plus kids that potentially end up going D1. But right now, like, DeJuan Mack is a safety, a 3-star safety out of Lee Summit North in the Kansas City area. He is the 22nd overall player in the state, according to Rivals right now. He's already committed to KU. The 25th rated player in the state of Missouri is a cornerback out of Lutheran North. He has already committed to play for KU. That's 25 deep potentially in the state next year. You've got other kids, two of them already committed to Mizzou, one to Baylor, one to Stanford. They're all rated 16 through 20 in the state. This is a class where for Eli Drinkwitz, we've already seen his recruiting is top notch. He's taking it to a different level from where Mizzou has been in recent years. If he's able to do that next season, I mean, Mizzou could end up this year. I think they're 21 right now. They could end up in the top 20 if they're able to really get some of these guys to jump on board by the end of the cycle.
Yeah. And I've mentioned it in a few of the pieces. recently. But this 2022 class is going to be really important for Drink. And I'm sure he knows that. I'm sure he sees the rankings just like we do. But this class has an unusual amount of depth in it. And it's not just your normal one elite prospect. And then there's a large middle. There's a very large amount of upper echelon recruits in Missouri for 2022. So first eight guys in the state, four stars. That doesn't happen in Missouri, full disclosure. 2 5 stars in this class. Also doesn't happen. Last time that happened, 2012. That was a DGB class. So this class is very deep. Drink has done some pretty good work so far already in getting Thompson and guys like Jamarion Wayne. And that's a good start. But if he can find a way to land some more of these guys, keep it local, keep it home, man, something special could be on the come up. So I'm looking at all these guys undecided, all these guys from the St. Louis area, you know, that dominating that area, dominating your state, it really will send a message. I had a tweet this past weekend, thinking out loud. So many of these guys, especially the wide receivers particularly, will just get swooped automatically. It's like Missouri has not even had a chance to even recruit for them. And now it seems like we're getting to the point to where it's at least somewhat competitive for us in the St. Louis area. And I think that's a testament to what Drink has done so far, but we got to keep it going for 22.
You've got to find a way to make those inroads, and he's done that. And then when you make those inroads, you got to capitalize on these guys, right? Mm-hmm. The guys like Luther Burden and Tyson Ford, and they've already done it with Isaac Thompson. When you have opportunities to go in and get blue chip talent that is in your backyard, that's when it really becomes important. We've talked about this for years with the Mizzou basketball team, where it's like, if you could literally just every year take one of the top three players from the state, you could build a heck of a basketball program. Well, the same is true in football. You can stack up more in terms of the numbers, but if when you have those blue chip players, you're able to get them committed, this is where Gary Pinkel had a lot of his success towards the end, 2007 to 2013-ish. When you have those guys that are blue chippers, you got to find a way to at least get some of them. You got to make some hay with them, and that's where Gary Pinkel was able to do it, and we'll see what Eli Drinkwitz is able to do. I have a strong suspicion that he's gonna make good on some of these as well. One thing that he will not have at his disposal, though, is Ryan Walters, who has decided he is going to be the next defensive coordinator at Illinois. He was offered the job. He has accepted that job as of today. We're recording this on Wednesday evening. He made $900,000 at Mizzou. I would be surprised if he makes significantly more than that at Illinois. So the question naturally becomes, and I would imagine a lot of you guys listening are asking this question right now, fairly so, why is Ryan Walters leaving for what appears to be at best a lateral move? So there's a tweet from Dave Matter that I think is worth reading. He tweeted out earlier today, "The strong sense I got from Mizzou earlier this week when the report first surfaced about Ryan Walters talking to Illinois was that Mizzou was not worried about the situation, as in they weren't worried about moving on should he ultimately decide to leave." Now, this is one of those situations where you have to read between the lines a little bit, Aaron. I don't think there was any, like, this has to happen, you need to leave, said to Ryan Walters. I think they would have been perfectly fine with him coming back next year and being their defensive coordinator. I also don't think it's a situation where Eli Drinkwitz and Ryan Walters were like, no, this is a match made in heaven. We've got to have Ryan Walters at Mizzou for 2021. I think it was an arranged marriage where both of them knew this is probably the best that they were going to be able to do going into last season, given how late in the process it was. And so Ryan Walters decided to be the defensive coordinator, got a nice little payday, got himself a raise, was the defensive coordinator at Mizzou. If things went south, he should have and probably did know he was going to be the first guy to go. If for whatever reason the defense did not live up to expectations next year, Ryan Walters' name suddenly isn't as hot as it is right now, where he's got opportunities to go elsewhere, and he's probably going to be done at Mizzou. So I don't think it's a situation where this was a toxic relationship or anything like that. I do think it is a situation where it wasn't the worst thing in the world for either of them to ultimately decide to part ways, though.
Yeah, and like we kind of talked about it off air, I was really surprised initially when he decided to make that decision. Did not really see it coming, and I think that unless you were paying attention and, like you said, reading in between the lines like that, you probably wouldn't have seen that coming. They paid him an awfully large amount of money last season, and I know there was a lot of people who were disappointed in the defense, and I guess that could be fair or unfair depending on how you look at it, but he's gone, and you have to wonder what the effect is going forward. But yeah, I don't think this is a situation of him just liking Illinois better, or I don't even necessarily think he'll meet the amount of money that he was making at Missouri. I don't really expect that. So I wish him the best. I appreciate his contributions while he was here. But yeah, I guess just maybe not a good fit with the staff that's currently in place.
Did you see the Enos Rakestraw tweet earlier today?
Oh, yeah, I did.
For anybody that hasn't, if you're not on Twitter, Enos Rakestraw Jr., who was responding to the report from Dave Matter that Illinois had officially hired Ryan Walters as the defense coordinator, Enos Rakestraw responded to that saying, "Crazy stuff, cutthroat, recruited me to leave." That was his response to that tweet from Dave Matter. Now, Aaron, is he saying that Ryan Walters recruited him and then he left? Or is he saying that Ryan Walters recruited him to leave, to follow him to Illinois?
So initially, that was my understanding. My understanding was that Walters was recruiting him with one foot out the door, trying to get him to go to Illinois with him. From what I'm understanding now, that it was more of a, he was my primary recruiter during my recruiting process. I have one season on the team, and then he's immediately gone. So I don't know if he was actually recruiting him for Illinois. I don't actually believe that that was the case, but it does make you kind of wonder what the effects are on the current roster, and not only just that, but the guys who he's been recruiting for Missouri currently. I think of a guy like Isaac Thompson, who is a safety, who was recruited by Walters and was expecting Walters to be his position coach. I wonder if he looks at this a little bit closely. So stuff like that kind of makes me a little nervous, but I'm going to give Walters the benefit of the doubt and say that he was not trying to poach players off of our roster. Because
it wouldn't be the first time, won't be the last time, for what it's worth. Like, that's something that Mizzou will do to other teams, has done. I mean, they literally just got Dominic Lovett to flip, like, at the very last minute going into signing day.
Yeah.
So it's a shady business, man. You got to do what you got to do. And I wouldn't hold it against Ryan Walters if he tried to do it. I think it's slimy, but the business is slimy. So it wouldn't surprise me if he did try to do that. And it, frankly, good on him. You got to give it a shot, I guess. It didn't work, it appears. So,
right.
You know, worst case scenario, it's all good.
We'll see where it goes, but you know, I've heard a lot from people about Ryan Walters over the past year. And to be honest, especially with some space in between our last game, going back and looking at some of the film, a lot of these guys, man, were in good position. A lot of the times the calls are really good. It's just, man, it's the dudes. And that's what's going to matter at the end of the day. It's not, you know, it's not the X's and O's. It's the Jimmys and Joes. So, I wish him the best. I don't know how that will go at Illinois, for the record. We'll see. I mean, he can, I guess, still recruit St. Louis and still keep some of the ties that he's made. But, yeah, I guess we're on to better things, I would expect.
Yeah, I think he's a pretty good coach. I do. If you looked especially at Mizzou's third down packages that they had this year, a lot of it kind of reminded me of what you would see from a Barry Odom defense. I thought he did a pretty good job, and he implemented what was truly his scheme this year. I thought it went pretty well, all things considered. They basically kind of played like a big nickel most of the time. I got no issues with it. I thought Ryan Walters did a solid job, all things considered. I also think he's a pretty decent recruiter from everything that we've heard. So it's a loss, certainly. Not one that you can't overcome, but it's a loss nonetheless. I think this is a huge hire for Eli Drinkwitz. I don't know where he's going to lean. I know, like, if you're looking at some of the big names that are potentially out there, I don't know how realistic any of these are. Like, Derek Mason, obviously fired by Vandy. Will Muschamp, fired by South Carolina. Kevin Steele out at Auburn. Those are three that immediately come to mind. Marcus Freeman is one of the best young defensive coaches in the country. He's apparently right now on a visit at LSU, though. If LSU's looking at him and they want him, they're going to get him. They can pay like $2 million for their coordinators, so that's not an option if they want him. But if he's looking and he's interested in coming to the SEC, he's currently Cincy's defensive coordinator. Mizzou, I bet you could get to like a little bit more than $1 million, and I think he's making like $600,000 right now at Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely worth considering. If not one of those four, internal candidate, I would think, is David Gibbs. He's done the job before. He would not be my first choice, but it is what it is. Ted Roof was the defense coordinator for Drinkwitz at App State. He was the defense coordinator at Vanderbilt this year. These are the types of hires at coordinators and position coaches where it could be a total surprise, too. I don't think a lot of Illinois fans had Ryan Walters pegged as an option whenever Brett Bielema got the job, right? Whoever the Ryan Walters equivalent is out there, Mizzou might end up with a guy like that. I don't know who that guy is right now, but I would imagine over the next few days and weeks, those are going to be some of the candidates that we start hear more about.
Definitely. I think it's really important, as we're recklessly speculating who could potentially take this job, that we kind of look at who does Drinkwitz know, kind of, and where has he been? And I think kind of looking along those lines, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if he went into the Sun Belt, you know, and plucked maybe a guy like Chad Staggs from Coastal. Had a pretty good year, and he's kind of familiar with it. So guys like that, I think that he kind of has some feel for and kind of has some experience, younger, and I think a recruiting ace is kind of what the profile is for. It seems like everybody on the staff. Everybody on this staff seems like is an ace recruiter. So there's plenty of guys who could make that adjustment, and plenty of guys who would love to take that money. And I'm really looking forward to seeing in what direction they decide to go in.
And that's the thing, is Mizzou now has that money to be able to spend on these coordinator hires, right? I mean, I think, mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, I think Dooley made around $1 million as well. So they're not afraid to go out there and spend some money if the guys are available. I mean, the other thing is you look at some of the hires that he made last year. Bush Hamden, a guy from Washington, that wouldn't have been somebody that immediately popped up on my radar. Same thing for Casey Woods, who was coming in from UAB. A great hire. These guys are good hires. But, like, there was no reason to initially connect them with Eli Drinkwitz. And so that's why I'm a little hesitant to dive too far into this, just because it's so hard to know with the assistant coaches. I mean, it might be as simple as, hey, it's not Eli Drinkwitz, but maybe it's Charlie Harbison has a relationship with somebody else who he thinks Drinkwitz should look into. Drink decides to look that direction, and boom, suddenly that's the next defensive coordinator hire, right? Maybe it's somebody that Charlie Harbison coached with at Mississippi State back in 2007, or at Alabama in the early 2000s. It's so hard to know, man. So it's a huge hire. I think it has the potential, to a lesser degree, to be similar in terms of importance to what we saw from Barry Odom when he ultimately went with Derek Dooley. Now, okay, I don't think this is going to be a hire that gets him fired. I don't think Eli Drinkwitz is going to be fired, because I think he's a better coach than Barry Odom was. But this is going to potentially set in motion the ceiling of what Mizzou's at for the next 3 or 4 years. Because if you make a good hire here, especially with what we were talking about with the in-state recruiting and with the talent that they're about to start filtering through on the defensive side of the ball potentially because of that recruiting, you could have ceiling years here in 2 to 3 seasons. And whoever that next defensive coordinator hire is, you hope, would be the DC whenever you hit that ceiling. So if it's a good hire, it could potentially continue to elevate what those peak years can be. And if it goes wrong, if it goes south, if you get the wrong guy in here, well, that could be the thing that ultimately blows that up. So it's a really important hire to me for what Eli Drinkwitz is going to be here over the next few seasons.
I agree, man. I definitely do. And I have a question for you, actually.
Yeah.
What do you think the attractiveness of this position is? How attractive do you think the defensive coordinator at Missouri, how attractive of a job do you think that is?
It's interesting because they're going to be competitive with salary, it seems like. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're making about $1 million as a defensive coordinator at a Power 5 school, that is in line with like top 25 types of pay for coordinators. So you don't have to worry about that. You're in a conference where you're going to get notoriety if your defense does well. There's been clear upward mobility by coming to Mizzou and being the defensive coordinator here. We just saw Ryan Walters was able to have, at worst, a lateral move. Barry Odom was able to get a head coaching gig out of it. You can elevate yourself by doing well here. I think the question would be, how do other coaches view Eli Drinkwitz? If they view him as an up-and-comer and they think they're getting in on kind of the ground floor of what could be something really good at Mizzou, well, then it's a really good job. Because if you do well and you get in on the ground floor of this, and I mean, 3 years from now, you could be a candidate to be, at worst, a head coaching candidate for like a place like Memphis. But it is not on the level with LSU. It's not an Alabama. It's not at that level. But it's a top 30 to 40 job probably, because you're basically the head coach of that side of the ball. So you're going to get all of the credit for whatever Mizzou does defensively. The problem is you're also going to get all of the blame.
As the life of a DC, oh man, this is, like you said, to your point, this is going to be a huge higher going forward, and I think it shapes what is the ceiling and the floor really of these teams going forward. There's a lot of talent. It feels like it's almost like a blank canvas, and you have like some of the best paints ever just sitting to the side ready to be used. But it's really going to depend on the guy who they decide to get in here. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm cautiously nervous. I hope he doesn't go with Bo Pelini. So.
No, I don't think that's going to be the hire. I hope I don't have to eat my words on that, but I don't think that's the direction that Drink's going to go. I will say, just as a word of caution for Mizzou fans, I don't know that this is going to be done quickly. There's really no rush for it because the late signing period isn't what it once was. There's going to be maybe a few more players added to Mizzou's class, so it's not like you're getting him in to make sure that you're able to recruit based on who your defensive coordinator is, at least for this class. Maybe that changes because there's some urgency to show a guy like Tyson Ford or Marquise Gracial. Maybe you want to show them who the next guy is and they want to know before they make their decision. That's possible, but there's not a lot of urgency here. They don't start spring ball for a little while. You don't need a defensive coordinator in here immediately. I think it could, at the very least, be a few weeks before we know who the next Mizzou defensive coordinator is. Could happen quicker, but I wouldn't be surprised if it takes a while.
Awesome. Definitely awesome. I'm looking forward to it. I really am. I'm very nervous, but I am looking forward to this.
Me too, man. It's big. It's really big, and there's the reason to believe that Eli Drinkwitz is going to make a good hire, because so far I was listening to guy for The Athletic the other day. Why am I blanking on his name? College football for The Athletic. Bruce Feldman.
For Mizzou?
Oh, Bruce Feldman. He was on with a local radio show the other day, and he was talking about Eli Drinkwitz and basically said, like, you know, he put together a really good staff, and he kind of stopped himself for a second. He was like, actually, like a really excellent staff in year one at Mizzou. And he did. He put together a tremendous staff very quickly at Mizzou. And so I have faith that he's going to be able to do it again and make a really important hire here. But I'm very curious to see what the direction is that he's going to go. What does he want from his defense? What does he want from that position in particular? Is he looking for somebody more experienced? Is he okay with getting an up-and-comer? Are they willing to pay out all of the money to get one of the top candidates on the market? There's There's a lot of good coaches out there that are potentially available, and I'm fascinated to see the direction that they ultimately decide to go with this.
And another question is, does this have any, do you think Walter's leaving has any effect on any of the other defensive position coaches?
I wouldn't think so. The only holdover was David Gibbs and Brick Haley, right? Those were the two,
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken. So I wouldn't think that this is a significant change for any of them. I think Brick really likes it in Columbia. I don't know on Gibbs either way, but I'm pretty sure Brick Haley really enjoys having his family in Columbia. So I wouldn't think that it changes anything for him. But it's hard to know, man, because if another program came calling and said, we would love to have Brick Haley as our next defensive coordinator, well, that changes some things, right? Because then basically you're as faithful as your options. And I don't know what the options are that are out there for either of those guys.
Okay. Just checking.
I think it's worth considering. Every year we got very used to with Gary Pinkel, his staff basically staying stagnant for the better more often than not. That's not the norm around college football. Most of these programs are going to see two or three coaches leave on an annual basis. And so far we've seen one. It shouldn't come as a shock to anybody if we see more. That's speculation by me, but that's just kind of the way college football is now. You see the transfers with the players, and you see a lot of movement with the coaches year to year.
Especially this year.
Especially this year. All right, Aaron, I think that's all I've got. Anything else you wanted to make sure that we added?
I don't think so. I'm, you know, spring ball can't get here quick enough, and we're following recruiting news and that kind of stuff. But, man, I miss real football already.
Yeah, me too. We've got some football coming up this weekend. I know your Browns are in a tough spot.
Don't get me started.
It could be going better for them, but I actually still like their chances to be able to pull off that upset against the Steelers. So you'll at least have that for yourself this weekend. You guys should follow him on Twitter. He is at iairdry, the letter I, air dry. Follow him on Twitter. Check out his work over on the flagship site as well, at Rock'em Nation on Twitter, rockhamnation.com. I'm Brandon Kiley. Nate Edwards will be back eventually. He is doing bigger and better things right now, taking care of the baby at home. So for Aaron, I am Brandon. We will talk to you guys next week on the Before the Box Score on Rock'em Nation and rockhamnation.com.